So, yesterday we saw this verse, ninth verse, isn't it? Punyoganda Pradivyamscha Tejaschasmi Vibhavsau Jivanam Sarvabhudeshu Tapaschasmi Tapasvishu. That is what talked about yesterday. Punyoganda Pradivyamscha Tejaschasmi Vibhavsau Jivanam Sarvabhudeshu Tapaschasmi Tapasvishu. As we are discussing vibhudis in the Bhagavadam, same thing Krishna is speaking in another way while talking about. But here, with the understanding that what we have to remember here is, think about your own body. Thinking about your own body. Krishna says here that when you are smelling something, that smelling is called the nose. Nose is not what this one is. This is not the nose. Okay. For in the world when we communicate, we point this out as the nose. But this is not the nose. The nose is that smelling is the nose. The smelling. Why is it like that? Because prithvi, punyoganda prithivyamscha. Prithvi is earth, isn't it? See, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken many things. He has just spoken and gone because in the battlefield. But to understand the background of all these things, you have to go back to other Prakarana Grantham. Prakarana Grantham means books which will explain in detail about what does this mean. That Punyoganda Pradivyamscha, when you smell the earth, the smell and the earth is the same. Smell and the earth is the same. Because earth is present inside us, we are smelling. Otherwise we can't smell. Because the earth is present inside us, we are smelling. So, these five material elements, when they are present inside us, they do the job in a different way. Like, the smelling is done through the earth. So this is, nose is not the thing, earth is the thing that is working as the smelling power. The smelling power in us. So, so this part is not the nose, the power to smell is the nose. For doctors and all, this is where important. Smelling is done through the nose, isn't it? But the power to smell is called nose. The sense. The sense. And that is exactly is earth. That's exactly is earth. So in other words, earth, the smell, and what is present in us is one and the same thing. It is a very subtle thing to understand. But if you just have to accept it like that. That earth is outside, that earth is present inside us, and therefore the smell is present in us. Smelling nature is present in us. Because prithvi, earth, her tanmatra, it is called tanmatra. Tanmatra is smell. Tanmatra is smell. Gandham. Gandham is prithvi's tanmatra. So, when prithvi is inside, gandham will be there. That's why panchabhudam, somebody, Swamiji, sannyasis will say, this body is panchabhudam, they will say. That's all they will say. Body is panchabhudam. Once a sannyasi got very sick. He was 85 years old. And because he was very good in his spiritual life and had a very deeper level realization inside, he was already practically free from the body. And he was in a very, sick state at that age, 85 years old. The body was practically finished and death could come any time. It was that state. And if you look at him, it looked so awful to see a person like that, in that state. Everything in the body is practically has lost its strength, and it looked really, really, you know, ready to leave the body in that state. And he was smiling. So they asked him, Swamiji, do you know where you are? One of his disciples asked him. Swamiji said like this, I am in the middle of five material elements, he says. To such an extent, he has separated himself from the body. To answer that in that state, with that conviction, that I am lying down in the middle of five material elements, that was the answer, panchabhudam. He says, I am in the middle of these five material elements, I am lying here. Practically he is saying this, that once this Panchabhutam leaves, I can go. Nothing is going to hold me back. So, deeper level, when you get yourself released from the body, this understanding must come. Otherwise, it's no point, isn't it? Understanding must come, that body is not me. All the time we are now repeating, I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not for enjoyment. But all the time I'm thinking, I'm this body. I cannot stay without this body. This attachment hasn't gone away. That's why it is saying that. Similarly, water and the taste. We say the tongue is tasting. Who is tasting? You see, water is always there in the tongue, isn't it? If the water is not there, you can't taste anything. Can the finger taste anything? Why only tongue can taste? Because water is there. So basically, water and the taste is not different. And because the water is there in the body, tongue is able to taste. Tongue is also a piece of flesh like anything else in this body. But presence of water is necessary that you are able to taste anything. So water, the taste, they are not different. It's not the tongue that is tasting. It is the presence of the water in the tongue that you are experiencing the taste of anything. So in the same way, eyes are seeing. Eyes are seeing. Who is seeing? This fire in the eye is seeing. There is light, fire in the eye due to the presence of sun in the eye. He is seeing. Or in other words, the fire element is present in the eye, therefore you are seeing. Not due to this retina or due to the presence of this, what do they call this, inside eye. That is only created in that way. But the real power of seeing is coming from fire. It's coming from fire. proof to tell us that fire is present in the body. Therefore we are seeing. And similarly, we are able to touch things, isn't it? Sense of touch. That is present in us. Who has a sense of touch? The air has the sense of touch. Is it not? Air has the sense of touch. Because air has the sense of touch, the air is present in the body, you are able to experience a sense of touch. You have the sense of touch. If there is no air in the body, you won't feel any sense of touch. Sense of touch. Just like we say, when a man is dead, what do we say? The prana has gone. The air has gone from the body, isn't it? The air has gone. So you can see that person does not feel any sense of touch. And when he's dead, he's not feeling any sense of touch. So from all these things, in the same way, the sky is present in the ear. We are talking about the five material elements. The sky, its tanmatra is sound. The sky's very subtle quality is sound. And because that sound, sky is inside the ear, we are able to hear. The sound we are able to hear, the perception of the sound. The sound can only travel through the sky. Sound can travel through the sky. In other words, sky can carry the sound. And that sky element is present in the ear, therefore we are able to hear. Not because of these big things on the both sides. That's not what is hearing. Who is hearing? The sky in the ear is hearing. The sky in the ear is hearing. So five material elements, we must know how they are present inside us and what is the reaction, what is the result of that? We are able to interact with the world. Through the mind is able to interact with the world. So all these five material elements are inside us. This is how Shastram will tell us. Shastram will talk to us in this way. That very sages who know these things, you have a lot of books about all this. There's a process called Panchikaranam. There's a book about Panchikaranam. Five material elements, how they mix each other, the science behind it. It is not all just stories written. There's a complete science behind it. Sages telling us how this, when you study, this is all Jnanamargam. And if you ignore all that things, how will you know that you'll have to just bluntly accept it. Huh? It is sky. It is. They are saying that there is five material elements in me. Doctors are telling me it's all blood and mucus and flesh and bones and marrow and everything. So there is a contradiction between the Shastram and the doctors. Why should I accept the Shastram? This is how the scientists and the communities reject Shastram, isn't it? Because they can't see the subtle things. What they can see with the eyes, that's only reality. They see the blood, oh, there's a blood in the body. But Shastram is telling, blood, bones, marrow, flesh, all these are not important. The subtle elements that has created you is these five material elements. Five material elements. It is their transformed state is all these things. Material elements, when they are transformed into another form, it has come in the form of this. But the basic elements is these five material elements present in us. Shastram is not saying, have you noticed that? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Bhumi apanalo vayu kham mano buddhi revaja ahangare idhi yamme bhinna pragrati ashtatha. He says there, isn't it? In the 7th chapter. Earth, water, air, ether and fire, mind, intelligence and false ego. If you mix all these things together, that's you. Krishna's statement. Never mention bone, marrow, flesh, blood or hair or skin. Nothing is mentioned. Five material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego. If you mix all these things, that's you. Apara Prakriti, Krishna calls it. So the Shastram is coming from one angle. The science, modern science is coming from a different angle. Modern science is coming from, starting from a much later stage. Krishna is starting from the very basic, very fundamental things, from where it's coming from. That's the difference between the science and the Shastram. In the science and the Shastram. So why it is said like that is, first thing we have to understand, the whole creation is within us. Because it's like this. Prapancham means creation. The whole creation is also material elements. We are also material elements. Same five material elements. So, in other words, when they discuss about us, about ourselves, they will put it like this, Samashti and Veshti. Samashti is the creation in a large scale, big scale. What they call as the, in a very major scale. In a large scale is Samashti. In the minor scale, in a very miniature scale, is Veshti. That's us. The materials are not different. Same material in a big scale, another scale in us. Quantity-wise may be different, but the mixing is also different. The mixing of that is called Panchikaranam. Panchikaranam. How to mix these five material elements while we are created? And because so many subtle things are, all are subtle there, isn't it? Material elements also, it's their tanmatra that you are mixing with mind, intelligence and ego. And that mixture is called Panchikaranam. There's a book available on that Panchikaranam. Those who want to, or so serious to know about that. So, the whole world is within us, in other words. Because it's the same material elements that is present inside. So, if we don't have the eye, we cannot see anything in the creation, isn't it? Nothing in the creation we can see. That is useless. Why? Because the sun is present in the eye. Sun is present in the eye. And the sky is present in the ear. And similarly, the earth is present in the nose. And the air is present in the skin. And if all these things are not there, five elements are not there. Five elements are not there. So basically what Krishna is saying there is, these five material elements in its original form, they are in us. They are in us, not in the world. This is another important thing. We are always thinking, naturally our mind will go like this. What? What will it say? It will say, we are made of five material elements. So we will think, five material elements in its pure form is in the nature. From there, Krishna took the material elements and mixed and created us. It's not like that. Five material elements in its pure form is in us. Because Tanmatra is in us. Panchatanmatra is in us. And it is this material elements, Krishna is saying here, that Moola Rupam, its original form, is in our body. Is in our body. So, what Krishna is going to say here is that, Punyoganda Prithivyamscha. You see that? Krishna says Punyogandham. Punyogandham means what? Smell which is very auspicious. Which is very auspicious. Sacred fragrance, it is called. Sacred fragrance. So why is it sacred? Because when it rains, and if you can smell the earth, immediately you should smell it in such a way that this meditation should come to you, that you are smelling that five material element. In other words, Krishna's presence in there. That smell, that subtle quality of that earth is Krishna. Krishna is saying that here, isn't it? So, Punyoganda Prathivyamscha. When it rains outside, and when that earth smell comes out, if it's not waking up your thoughts on Krishna, you have not understood Bhagavad Gita. You may have got the best certificate, but you have not understood Bhagavad Gita is concerned. Punyoganda Prathivyamscha. Every time, whenever there is a rainfall, particularly after this sun, when there's a rainfall and you smell the earth, isn't it? Sometimes people say it smells nice. The earth smells nice, especially if that land is not polluted by other things. If it's a forest land where there is not much of a pollution. Wherever you have put concrete and tar and asphalt, concrete will smell or the tar will smell. Isn't it? But where we have not gone and destroyed it anywhere, if there is any land left in this world, whenever there it rains comes and there's a smell from the earth. When that earth smell comes, Punyoganda Prithivi. Prithivi is that beautiful smell should remind you of Krishna, and then you have understood Bhagavad Gita. That's the point. So if you have not got that, there's no much of a use going to temple. It's like that. That means you are in a very much in the very, very, very basic state of spiritual life. You're going to the temple, but when it rains, there is no experience of the smell of the earth. So, so that is why Krishna uses the word punyam. Punyoganda Prithivyamscha. That punyam, what is that? Why is it punyam? Because it is that smell, me. I am that smell. When you are, that is my presence, Krishna says. You are recognized Krishna's presence there. That is the first certification. Krishna's presence in the earth. Punyoganda Prathivyamscha. That, and that is Krishna's appearance there. Krishna's appeared there in that form. You see, in the past when Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and prior to that, when Krishna is talking about this from the Upanishads and all that, those sages, they went to the forest, didn't they? And they spent considerable time in the forest observing the nature. And from the nature, in a very subtle level, they have found out all these revelations to them, that what is the origin of everything? What is the origin of everything? And they did not conduct experiments. Did you notice that? In the modern science, everything is experiment, isn't it? We believe in experiments now, research work. And we want to stay away from the earth and want to find out about the origin of the earth. That's how our research is now. The best research centers, if you go like all the big companies or the institutions which are into research work, they want to stay away from the earth and want to find out the origin of the earth. But these very fundamentals are not taken into account at all. They come at 10 o'clock into their laboratory where they want to do the research. But the very simple facts of life is not in their calculations at all, in their research work at any stage. That's why I was saying, remember, that the two hairs standing on the body and talking to each other, that where I am standing there is no life, but I got life. When the wind is blowing, the hair is talking to each other. Our position is like that. We are standing on the earth and saying, the earth has no life. I've got life. Earth is no life. Earth is all dead matter. How could this be? How could it be? The very fact that we are sustained by Mother Earth and we are saying Earth has no life. So all this logic doesn't work. So here, Krishna. So this manifestation of Krishna in the material, in this material nature, is to be understood all the time. So it is from this principle that in the deity worship, we use different objects, articles of worship, isn't it? Articles of worship. When we light the incense, that incense is the representative of that smell of the earth. Smell of the earth. When we do our puja or whatever we do, how much are we conscious of that? We just think, is the incense there on the incense holder? That's all we are concerned about. And if it's a nice smell, it's nice. So we feel like that. And we do 3 times, 7 times, 9. We are more concerned about how many times, the rule part of it. Krishna is saying whether you do 1 time, 10 times, if you are doing like a mota, it's no use. But important thing is, that smell, that incense is representation of Krishna's potency of the Punyo Gantha Prithivi. Prithivi's Punya Gantham is that what is coming through that incense. Coming through that incense. So, punyoganda prativyamscha tejaschasmi vibhavasau. Tejaschasmi vibhavasau. In other words, when the light is when the incense is lighted, you have to know that when the smell is coming out, Krishna has come. Krishna has come. That way, we have to keep our consciousness in that way. So Prithvi, Mother Earth, she has this punyam, punyatam, this quality in a natural way, she has got it. That only she feels bad, she feels smells bad sometimes, only because we have spoiled it, the purity of the earth, by pumping false dirty things on her body and doing different things on her body. And whenever she mixes with these dirty things, she gets the bad smell. The earth gets the bad smell. In the natural way, she has got fragrance. Mother Earth has fragrance. She smells good. So other things, when it mixes with them, it gets foul smell, comes from the earth. When other things mixes with it. Otherwise, on its own, it has punyogantham, pure. It is pure. So yogi says to us, yogi who follows a yoga process, they say to us, that if that durgandham or bad smell is taken out from there, Mother Earth will not have any bad smell. If you remove those which has polluted that, it will not have any bad smell. Tejaschasmi vibhavaso. Vibhavaso means fire. Vibhavaso means fire. So, whenever we look at fire, you find what is known as tejasa. Tejasa means that glowing nature of the fire. Isn't it? The nature of the fire, what attracts us to the fire. When the fire is burning, everyone looks at it. Why? It is attractive, isn't it? The fire when it's burning, we make fire at home in the winter time, isn't it? Although there is gas fire, we are not attracted to it so much as the wood fire. When the wood is burning, there is some beauty to that. Why? Why is that? There's some attraction to that fire when it comes from the wood. So, that is that tejasa. Tejasa in the fire from the wood. That is what it is called. Tejas chasmi vibhavaso. So, Krishna is saying, that tejasa of that fire is me. When you feel that attraction towards the fire, that tejasa is me. Krishna says, that's me. This is how we have to see Krishna in this world. So, because of this only in the olden times, many Brahmana families, they'll keep the fire going all the time. Fire going. There are many, many families still in whose houses, for many generations, the fire has stayed without being extinguished. They looked after the fire. They'll continuously make sure the fire burns at home. Fire is going on at home. So, not only Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas also used to have that. And that is called in Aupasanam. Aupasanam it is called, that particular karma. So people think that Aupasanam was only for the Brahmana. But it was not only Brahmanas who performed that. Aupasanam was for Brahmana, Kshatriya and Vaishya. All of them did that. But in course of time, Vaishyas left that habit, Kshatriyas also left it, it stayed with the Brahmanas, and now Brahmanas have also left it. That is what has happened. But very few are still there, very, very few, who still have fire going on in their home for many, many generations. Fire has been going on. They also don't know how many generations the fire has been going on in the house. They'll keep that fire going. So Upasana Karma is protecting this fire, because it is with that fire, very rigid people who followed Vedic culture very rigidly, eventually when they die, to burn their body, they'll take the fire from this fire, what is burning at home, which has been burning in their home. So that is important for them. Actually, all this is coming from the Karmagandam of the Veda, Mimamsa in other words. And you have to remember, majority part of the Vedam is Karmagandam. So because it is a very integral part of Karmagandam, and those Brahmana who performed sacrifices, yajnam, they protected the fire. It is they who protected the fire. Many, many generations, they have practiced how to recite the Vedas, and they maintained this Vedic knowledge through the Vedic hymns, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam. All these hymns, they have recited day and night, and continuously chanted these hymns. Krishna loves to hear recitation of Vedam. That is always like that. In great, great temples, you will see there, their temple management has engaged some Brahmana just to recite the Veda for a few hours. It is a part of the deity worship. Suppose you are worshipping the deity in famous temples, there will be a lot of inauspicious sound from people. Ordinary people like us will go to the temple. We will be talking everything in relationship with mundane subjects, isn't it? People will talk. Even if we are standing up in the queue for seeing the deity, till we get to the deity, we won't be chanting the holy name. We will be talking about our business, our office matters, or good or bad about others, things like that, which is not to be spoken in the temple. Because of all the pollution people like us bring to the temple, to purify the temple environment, Vedas are recited. Vedic Vedam, particularly the Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, these three Vedas, they are continuously recited in the Vedas for purification of the place, and it is pleasing to Krishna to hear Vedam. There were some amazing personalities in reciting Vedam. Their history is really touches the heart, the way they lived, and they were pleased to Krishna through Vedic recitation. One person, he was, for many generations in the family, they were into this studying Rigvedam. Rigvedam was their traditional Vedam they followed. And they made sure that every generation that followed them, they taught them very well from an early day in life, and made sure that they became perfect in chanting. This they made sure. This was possible in the earlier times. Nowadays it has become difficult for them. So they have also given up everything and gone away. It is broken. It is completely broken. But when this was possible, they did it. When it was possible. In other words, when this material fever was not so strong like today. So there was this person who was expert in chanting, and it has become his. He used to chant, and the deities used to love hearing that. So in one instance, that he was in his early days, he was only a young boy. He had to go to learn how to recite the Vedas, and he had to cross the river to go to the teacher who lived on the other side of the river. So in one instance, and these teachers were very heavy. Sometimes they will teach you, and repeatedly teaching, they also feel that frustration sometimes, isn't it? If the student is not picking up, if you get a very dull student, it's very hard for them. Either they have to give it up there itself, or they will try their best, because they know very well that they have been given a body to develop this particular process of to protect the Vedas. You need people to learn the Vedas, isn't it? If you don't learn, what will happen? It will disappear. Even though all the Vedas are available in the book form now, it is useless. Why? There is no one who can recite them properly. Vedas are not a leaflet, literature given to us. It is the sound behind it, isn't it? And sound means you have to know how to spell that, pronounce it properly. Shabda Brahmam, as Krishna says here. Shabda Brahmam, Parabrahmam, Amaubhe, Shashwati, Tanu. Krishna says Shabda Brahmam is one aspect of that. So these personalities who were trained like that, they spend their time, they will give enough time to teach children. And children also, in response to that, they have to be very enthusiastic and serious about studying how to recite the Vedas. So that was the tradition. So in one instance, what happened was, this boy crossed the river, went to the other side, and on a very heavy, rainy season, the river was flowing very full. That day, he got delayed to come to the class due to the circumstances. Teacher was not very happy about that because he was expected the student to be there on time. And anyway, he did not say anything to him at that time, and he delayed the class because he had certain things in his mind to teach him on the particular day. So it all took a little time. In the night, by the time he came back after his lesson, it has rained heavily, water has leveled us. Come up very high in the river. There were no boats to cross. The little boy decided to swim across the other side. He swam. But the currents were very strong. He couldn't get out, escape from there. But he didn't die. After a long current flow of water, the water brought him to the river bank, far away from where he was supposed to go home, where his house was. So he got stuck there, many miles away from home. And that night, he went into the temple, a temple he saw nearby. He had to take shelter. There were so many temples at that time. Now we have got all factories everywhere, isn't it? Because our filling belly has become priority. So he took shelter of the temple, sat there in the morning. And he sat there and he thought, anyway, there's nothing in me left now. I'm far away from home. All I have is this, what I've learned in my life is this, how to chant the Vedas. He sat there and chanted the Vedas, sitting there in the temple in that state. Look at that mind behind it. He chanted the Vedas, and it has so happened that it was a Shiva temple. After a few hours he has chanted, from inside Shiva came out, opening the door. This was the potency of these people. Shiva came out from inside the deity and told him, close your eyes and you get back to your home. Krishna, Shiva took him back to the place where he came. From that day onwards, nobody knew how he got back from such a long distance. Krishna, Shiva brought him back. So this chanting Vedam is a very much an integral part of the temple worship from long, long time. What is left today is only just a very small element of that, what you see in Tirupati and a few places like that. It's just put a very small level, a couple of hours, somebody chants it. But in the past, it wasn't like that. Now, this personality, after he got back home, the parents asked him, where were you? Because it took some time for a day. The young boy wasn't turned up. So the boy told him, what has happened? This has happened to me. And from that day onwards, the parents told him that you chant the Vedas at the temple, local temple, whatever they lived, Vishnu temple it was. He kept chanting in that temple. And it was then that another place, Brahmanas had one ceremony. They wanted to have so many Brahmanas together, they had to chant the Vedas. This is all from the Karmakanda. When they had to chant together, they require a lot of experts like this to come and chant in that process. So that day, they invited this boy also to join them. There was a few miles away from that village. They asked him to come. So that day, Shiva said, the Vishnu temple where he was chanting, Vishnu says to him, you shouldn't go. I want to hear you chanting here every morning. Vedam's power. We think Vedam, if you start, so many people have done research into Vedam. Many German scientists have done. And many American scientists have done. They are still, it is fascinated by the sound of the Vedas. Sound of the Vedas. Some of them who have gone very deeper into it, they are still trying to find what is this potency behind the Vedam. They are unable to trace it out. So anyway, Vishnu did not want this devotee to go away that day. So he didn't turn up for the particular day. So when the Brahmanas all assembled in that particular temple, which was a Devi temple, where they were performing some yajnam, sacrifice, and they had to chant the Vedas, he didn't turn up. So they all started questioning, because those days you couldn't call on the mobile or anything. Somebody has to walk miles to find out what has happened. So they were arranging someone to go and find out. From inside, Sri Parvati said, I already told him not to come. That was from inside. This is the potency of the Veda. Shri Parvati from inside deity spoke, he will not come, he doesn't have to come. I've told him to stay back where he is. So like this, there is history behind all these personalities. We are coming back to this. Tejas chasmi vibhavasau. So in this fire which was present in everyone, in the Mimamsa Sampradayam, Karmagandam is Mimamsa, Jaimini, isn't it? This is all authentic Vedic processes. We are not, now when we recite the 10 offenses, isn't it? There we talk about this Karmagandam, isn't it? What do we say there? We say there in the 10 offenses, isn't it? Then while talking about bhakti. Now, if you hear that, the impression you will think, this Karmagandam, what is all this? You won't know anything about it. Without knowing anything, you will start thinking about it in a wrong way. In a wrong way. And when you think about this, the person who is completely in responsibility for this Karmagandam is Jaimini. And Jaimini is a direct disciple of Vedavyas. So you can see that there must be something Vedavyas has taught Jaimini. And Jaimini has taken control of Karmagandam. What does it mean? It means that Karmagandam, Jnanagandam, Upasanagandam. Jnanagandam is Jnana Yogam. Karmagandam is Karma Yogam. Upasanagandam is Bhakti Yogam. All these three things are there in the Vedas. And they all have their own validity and value from the Vedic point of view. But when we discard jnanam or karmam, we should bear in mind they are not something to be looked at in an inferior way, in any way. But although you may be prolonging the upasana kandam, bhakti margam, it does not mean that Jnanakandam or Karmakandam has any lesser value as from the Vedic point of view. From the position of the Vedas, Karmakandam, Jnanakandam, Upasanakandam are all important. They all have its own effect on the people's life. Krishna is saying here that when the fire is burning, that illumination, effulgence or illumination, whatever that is coming from Tejas, Krishna is saying, that's my presence. So, therefore, Agni, fire, is Upasana. That is why for Upasana, Agni is necessary. Fire is necessary. Any Upasana, fire is necessary. Because of this, in the olden times, people, before they even chant, they will make sure there is a lamp is burning in some form. A lamp is burning. They will sit in front of a lamp. Agni. Agni is the Sakshi. Agni is the witness, fire is the witness. Because that is Krishna's presence. Even if you don't have any photo or deity or anything, at least if you light a lamp, not these lamps, the lamp which is burned from oil, proper fire in other words. So, pranam, it says, why we say this, if you look into Upanishads, you will see there, that there was a brahmachari by name Upakosala. Upakosala brahmachari, that was his name. That Upakosala Vidya is there, Upakosala's technique of self-realization. There's so many Vidyas mentioned in the Upanishads. Upakosala was a brahmachari who developed his own Vidya. So he went to his spiritual master, he was a brahmachari, and there the spiritual master is instructing him, giving him the Upanishad. It is 6 o'clock. We are allowed? 6:30, okay. So, Upakosala Vidya, brahmachari goes to spiritual master. Spiritual master did not say to him anything. He says, You light a fire and then you do reflection in front of the fire. That's all. The whole instruction is this much. The spiritual master knew the situation with the disciple, what he is capable of, what he needs. So much in depth he could see inside, the disciple's inside. So he says to him that you just do this, and saying this, spiritual master left. He never did anything. At one particular stage, fire god comes out from there and says to him, Prano Brahma, Kham Brahma, Kham Brahma. Three times. The fire god speaks to him, to this disciple, and that's all the instruction is. That's all the instruction is. Therefore, so at that time what happens? That fire from that fire god, Agni, he has come from that fire, and that fire is Krishna's presence. Krishna is instructing through that fire. Krishna is instructing that fire. So because of this, that from that he realizes the self. That's all the instruction necessary. It is not like we today, what do? We are trying to learn with the mind and intelligence everything, isn't it? That is not how you get to self-realization. By learning more. Learning more like this, what will happen is, acharyas are telling us, not my statement, that if you get into this learning, buying all sorts of books on all sorts of the corners and thinking that I will study this book, study that book, what it says is that Shabdajalam Maharanyam. This Shabdajalam means this books buying business, buying everything. That's all sound only in the form of the letters there. And what will happen is Chitta Brahmana Gana, you'll go crazy. It says after reading all the books. There are people like that who have gone crazy after studying too many books. Too many books. Basically, Krishna is saying that, you see, Krishna, whatever Krishna had to say to this world, he finished in 700 verses in Bhagavad Gita and about 1000 verses in the Bhagavatam. That's all. With 1700 verses, Krishna had told everything what he had to say to this world. Isn't it? 1700 verses, Krishna has spoken everything about spiritual life, the soul, maya, brahmam, jivam, karmam, anything and everything in relationship with spiritual life, Krishna has spoken 1700 verses. But unfortunately, for us, our nature of studying is based in a different pattern. Our way of thinking is different. Instead of taking these 1700 verses as everything, we get distracted to a large extent, and then we start looking anywhere and everywhere, and then sometimes we get nowhere at the end. At the end, nowhere. I have seen some devotees, they have purchased all the books what ISKCON has published, all the gurus what they have wrote, everything nicely stacked in the shelf, and sometimes they will read some book what they like. Oh, this is a nice book, let me read this for a few minutes, I'll put it back. Some other time they'll pick up something else and they'll read that. And then they will get all the other publications, ISKCON, World Bulletin, News Bulletin, and all the BTG magazines and everything. And if you go, everything looks very spiritual. Everything looks very spiritual. If you ask anything about realization, person is completely confused. Completely confused. There's no where to start, where to end, what the goal is, what I am here for. There's no idea. It's just confused altogether. He may give you some vague reply that after death I have to go back home, back to Godhead or Golokam or something like that. They'll say like that. But inside is all confusion. Confusion and confusion. Completely confusion. Why is like that? Because that's why. You can see here, this brahmachari goes to the spiritual master, and he says to him, sit in front of the fire and do the reflection on the soul. And at some stage, fire god comes out and instructs him, Prano Brahma, Kham Brahma, and Kham Brahma. That's it. The instruction is over. So, that is, because of this, you can see, we are discussing about the fire now. That's why I'm saying this. Punyo Gandha Pradivyamscha Tejas Chasmi Vibhavaso. In the olden days, there was no cooker, gas cooker like this, isn't it? They didn't have gas cooker. They also didn't have electric cookers, what we have today, high technology things. They didn't have. Every morning they have to cut the firewood, pieces of wood, they have to light the fire. They have to light fire. When they were lighting the fire, first thing what will they do? They pour some ghee into it as an offering to that fire. And that means, look at that spiritual culture behind it. Even cooking food starts as a sacrifice. They are not saying that, I can get this from Tesco fully done. All I have to do is to put it in the microwave and eat it. Why waste so much time? This is our logic. Their logic is, let me do it in the proper way so that they were not chanting 16 rounds. We will chant 16 rounds, but we will do all the other things exactly opposite way. On the other hand, they didn't chant 16 rounds, but their whole life was spiritual. Whole life, we are battling against all these things. Whole life, we have to battle against all these things what we have cultivated ourselves. So there, the life when the mothers, when they go to the kitchen to light there, to start cooking first time in the morning, they pour the ghee into the fire with this understanding, let this sacrifice, let this be a sacrifice. The cooking was such a sublime and noble life at that time. Noble life. Because it is there, everything is centered around the living entity's value for prasadam. And the whole spiritual activity of cooking is such an important thing. It's such an important thing. Because in spiritual life it does matter. All these things does matter. So, therefore, they'll say like that naturally they'll have this thinking inside. Nowadays we say, cooking. Who wants to do all this cooking? That's our attitude towards cooking, isn't it? But it wasn't like that in them. So, they used to do this, now because it's so simple, you just to put on the gas, isn't it? Comes out. Straight away it comes out. So, but have you looked something? There's a difference in the color of the fire. That bluish-brish gas, when it comes out, and the fire that comes from the firewood. Have you noticed the difference? Have you noticed it? Now, it is interesting, because this is interesting. When we go around, there are places still who uses firewood in cooking. Probably not here, I don't know here, but there are places in India where they still use firewood. They won't use gas, because gas is not available there. Or electricity is there, but cooker and all has not developed. Very interior places. And these people, they will cook only in the firewood. They are only used to it, firewood. They don't know anything else. And they'll come to city sometime. And by chance, they have to eat in a hotel, where there is all gas cooking, or electric cooking, whatever it is. When they eat the food, you ask them, they'll give you their opinion. They'll say, food doesn't taste. Food has no taste for them. And they will tell you that it is not cooked in the firewood. They don't have to go to kitchen. Not by any other thing, by the taste of the food. By taste of the food alone, they can say like that. Because the reason is that something from the fire is entering into the food while cooking. There is something that is entering into the food from the fire. And there is a difference in the quality of the fire. Now, fire has got 7 incarnations. There are 7 different types of fire. And all 7 of them have different personality. This is only, you will know this from the Shastram. And Shastram verses are spoken about that. Then, you can never say scientifically that fire is not entering into the food. Even if it is through a microwave you are heating up something, through the waves the heat is entering into the food, isn't it? So naturally when the cooking happens, something is entering from the fire that changes the food, the cooking, isn't it? Cooking is done by the fire. That heat that is coming from the fire, in other words, fire is entering into the wood, isn't it? Otherwise, otherwise, if the fire is not entering into the food, how will the rice get cooked? If the fire is not, heat is not entering. That heat which comes from the fire means fire is entering. Fire is entering through the heat into the food. So which fire is entering into the into the rice? That is the question, isn't it? That is important. And where, from which fuel it has come? That fire has come from which fuel? That heat has come from which fuel? And that is important then, is it not? If the food what we are eating is important, and if we accept this reality that without the heat not entering into the fire, food will not get cooked. That means it is not only the food that we are eating, we are also eating the fire in another form. Only thing is, fire has entered into the food and got mixed up with the food, and that's what we are eating. So is it not important from where that heat, fire is coming from? Is it not important? If you logically, I'm saying, if you ask in a logical way, this is all not, this is not a subject for scientific study. It's only a logic that I am eating certain food, say cooked rice or cooked chapati or whatever it may, or vegetables, whatever, doesn't matter. It got cooked only through the fire, the heat. Because of the presence of the heat, it got cooked. Now, the heat has come from some source. In other words, that source has entered into the food through that heat. And due to that presence, in other words, Agni is an integral part of our food. Our food also. So, the question here is that, the fire that I receive from that food, then we think that we are very intelligent people, isn't it? We are very intelligent people. Sometimes casually we say like this, so the food that is get cooked, what does it matter? Whether you cook it from firewood or whether you cook it with gas, what does it matter? After all, it is only food. But when you look at the taste, there is a slight difference. Only who has eaten food which is cooked by firewood will know that. Firewood will know that. Those who have from day one eaten microwave and gas cooker, they won't know that, would they? Because they never had it before. They'll never understand that. But those who are not, they'll say, oh, it's all the same. It makes no difference at all. But it is actually those who have regularly eating in firewood cook food, and then they try with the gas cooking, they say there is a difference. And that is the intuition from inside is telling you that there is a difference. There is certainly a difference. But everybody has thought about this, I don't know. But whatever it is, normally firewood that is used for cooking, that when we light the fire, the match, fire match, and that fire that comes to the food is not coming from the matches. The fire in the wood is coming to cook the food. It is the fire in the wood. It's only the lightning of the fire started with the matchbox. With the matchbox, when you put the matchbox. This all looks very simple, isn't it? Why I'm talking about all this in such length, you may be wondering. What is there so much to talk about it? Only when you think a little bit more cool about this, you will see what important it is. That you have lighted the wood with the matchbox and then you left it. Now, the fire did not come from the matchbox. Fire came from the wood. And it is the wood's quality and the fire that is actually cooking the food. That's actually cooking the food. Therefore, they were particular about what kind of wood should be used while cooking. Some temples still, they won't accept any wood for cooking. They have their own requirements. They will say, this is the type of wood, we will accept it. Otherwise, they won't cook. Particularly what they cook for the deities. What they cook for the deities. Whereas our conception is that, what does it matter? We have got the best cooker for Krishna, gas cooker. So whatever we have cooked must be the best. We have decided. But it is not like that. So the wood itself turns into fire. That's what's happening while cooking. Wood itself turns into fire and leaving behind the earth content in that wood, leaving behind the earth content in the food, the remaining part enters into the pot to cook. This is how that cooking happens. When cooking happens in the wood, there is the content of the earth and there is a content of the fire. The wood, what it does is, it sheds behind the earthly content and the fiery content goes into the pot to heat. It takes the heat and it cooks, and remaining parts it loses. So that fire is Krishna's presence. That fire is Krishna's presence. So according to that fire, there is this division of fire. The division of fire, where it's coming from? Saptavarnam. Saptavarnam means seven color the fire has got. The names are Kali, Karali, Manojavam, Sulohitam, Sudhumravarnam, Spulingini, Visharuji. These are the names of these different seven fires. You will see in the Bhagavatam also mentioned about this. But when we see, because we don't know that fire has seven different forms, depending on through where it came from. So here, Kali, Karali, Manojavam, Sulohitam, Sudhumravarnam, Spulingini, Visharuji, Lolayamanam idi sapta jihvaha. They are called fire gods, seven tongues. So with these seven tongues, the fire is burning. Now when they make offerings in the sacrifices, for example, big sacrifices like Adiratram, Agnishtomam, Vajaveyam, many big sacrifices when they perform, you know that fire has an important role. They make the kundam, what they call it, for fire sacrifice, what they build with the bricks and everything, isn't it? What is the English word? Anyway, you know what I'm saying, so that's enough. So, where offering is done, when the fire starts burning, the experts know which is the fire they should offer the offering. Which is the tongue through which the fire should accept. By looking at the fire, they'll tell you. So accurate and though so subtle was the understanding of the fire behind it. Understanding of the fire behind it. So that Krishna says here that ahudi, when they offer, ahudi it is called, that offering into the fire is called ahudi. When they perform the ahudi, they are conscious at what stage that particular tongue of that fire is ready to receive the ahudi, and at that time they will make the offering to the fire. They'll wait till then that tongue comes out to receive the ahudi. To such an extent, they knew that subtlety of the fire. So from here you can see that that Krishna's manifestation, because you know that everything offered in the fire goes to Krishna at the end, isn't it? Krishna receives through two places. One through the fire, other through the mouth of the Brahmana. Brahmana, Brahmanasya Mukham Asid, it says. Purusha Sutram will say like this. Brahmanasya Mukham Asid. Brahmana and Agni. Agni receives it and takes it to the different devadas to whom you have made the offering. Indra, Chandra, Varuna, all of them, they receive the offering through Agni. All the demigods, they receive their food. If you remember, when they talked about in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, Krishna talks about that, isn't it? Mutually you perform sacrifices for the pleasure of the demigods, isn't it? And in return, they will look after you. They will provide you all your necessities. There is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter. Do you remember? That mutually you help each other and live in this world peacefully. Krishna didn't say that you completely ignore all the devadas and start your factories and work there from morning to night and make your living like this. This is our invention. As far as Krishna is concerned, we don't have to work in this world. That is Krishna's way. Krishna is saying, I'll provide everything, provided what is necessary for maintaining this body in this world. Material nature will provide for as long as we are following that principle. So, this fire is the deity which is spoken majority of times in the Veda. Not Vishnu, not Shiva. Indra and Agni. These are the two deities whose names keeps coming up again and again and again in all the Veda. Not the Vishnu, not Shiva or Krishna or anything. Nothing like that. In the Vedas, these two, in Puranam it is Vishnu, Shiva and everything. But in the Vedam it is Agni and Agni and Indra. Two personalities who comes again and again. Most of the time. And almost majority of the hymns in the Vedas is addressing towards Agni or towards Indra. Towards Agni or towards Indra. Agni Mile Purohidam. Rigvedam begins with this sentence, Agni Mile Purohidam. That Agni is Krishna's presence. Is Krishna's presence. Agni. Agni means what they call Agnitvam. That fireness, fieriness in the fire is Krishna. That Tejas is Krishna. Fieriness in the fire is Krishna, Krishna's presence. So, because of this, they have built temples also. For this reason only. Five material elements, five temples. That five manifestations we went into. Isn't it? When we went there, we saw the five temples. One place is worshipped as earth, another place water, another place fire, another place air, another place ether. So, all these things, why? To experience Krishna's presence through these material elements also. In the far north, near Himalayas, there's a place called Jwalamukhi. Some of you may have heard that fire is worshipped there. In Jwalamukhi, fire is worshipped. And in Jwalamukhi, continuously fire is coming from the mountains, from the hills. So, and there, fire is worshipped as a manifestation of Sri Parvati, Devi. It is worshipped in that form. So, so it is quite normal to worship water in the form of Ganga River, isn't it? Yamuna River. that is all. Ganga, Yamuna, they are all representation of water. Representation of water. And fire, Krishna says here, Tejas Chasmi Vibhavasau. Jivanam Sarva Bhudeshu. Jivanam Sarva Bhudeshu Yena Jivandi Sarvani Bhudani Tajivanam. What does it mean? Yena Jivanti. Yena Jivandi. In this, he says here, Jivanam Sarva Bhudeshu Yena Jivandi Sarvani Bhudani Tad Jivanam. This is another interesting thing. Very interesting. We are all Jivan, isn't it? We are Jivas. We live in this body now. We live in this body. Now, what is that thing in us, the desire in us to live in this world? There's something is telling us we should live in this world, in this body, isn't it? Otherwise, we would have packed up and left this body long ago. But there is some power inside us telling us live in this body and try to be happy in this body, try to be comfortable. And some attachment in us to the body in some form which is inspiring us to live in this world, in this body. Krishna says, I am that. Just see. Jivanam sarva bhudeshu yena jivandi sarvani bhudani tat jivanam. And this desiring to live in a body is not only in the human species. Even if a small ant is going there, you try to kill him, he'll try to escape. He also wants to live. And right, all the birds also wants to live. All the animals in the forest, they also want to live. Why is that every one of us has this desire to live? Krishna says, that desire in a person is me. When you see that in any living entity, how can anyone give any pain to another living entity? That is the question. Because when you are trying to block that desire for another living entity to live in this world, practically we are going straight against Krishna there. Isn't it? Straight against Krishna. Krishna is saying here, Jivanam sarva bhudeshu. In all living entities is present there, this desire to live, desire to survive. Yena jivandi sarvani bhudani tat jivanam. That Tanjivanam, Sarvani Bhudani, in all living entities, Enajivandi, they want to live. But what do we say? Oh, that's all for our pleasure Krishna has created. Take the gun and go to the forest and shoot all the animals which are, and enjoy your life. This is our understanding. Tapaschasmi tapasishu, tasmin tapasi mai tapasvina pradaha. So, here, Tejasvina says here, now, tapaschasmi tapasishu. So, because, why is it like that? The reason for that is, that fire of Krishna inside asking us to live here in this body, giving us that desire to live, it is giving us a hope that at some point in time I will experience some happiness. That is why we are living in this body. It is, we may not know about it. We know all problems in life, isn't it? Problems at home, problems at work, problems at other places, and your own internal problems in the body, mind. Still, you don't want to give up, do you? We don't want to give up, we want to live. And that Krishna is saying is coming from me. Is coming from me. And exactly the same way we have got it, all other living entities also are experiencing the same thing. That desire to live. And therefore, if we have no right to take the life of any living entity, if we want to make progress in spiritual life, we have no right to touch any living entity, to do anything to them, any harm to them. So that is why Krishna is saying here, Jivanam sarva bhudeshu yena jivanti sarvani bhudani tajivanam. Sarvani bhudani, all living entities, they want to live in this world. Nobody wants to die. Now you can see, when you are going against that and thinking about suicide and things like that, you can imagine that what a gross, that you are fighting against practically Krishna. Krishna is saying, stay on. Don't give up the body, live there. And we are saying no. And this is a topic of discussion now, isn't it? Whether, what do they call that? Euthanasia. Whether it's right or wrong. Some countries are saying it's okay, some countries are saying it's not okay. And all that. This doubt even never existed in the past. Whether euthanasia, people will die. Many, many people, they never had any treatment, but still they will wait, accepting that. That is accepting Krishna. That is accepting Krishna. When we don't understand, when we become so dull in our head, our mind will go in this direction. This is what the problem with the education. Beware of the knowledge. All the knowledge we got from this world, ultimately it is bringing you to this conclusion that I can give up my life when I want. What does that mean? It means this, that the whole knowledge was faulty. Faulty knowledge we have acquired everywhere, and that is working now at the time when we need it. So, tapaschasmi tapasishu. This is another aspect. Krishna is saying to us where to see him in this world. Tapaschasmi tapasishu. Krishna says, among those who are performing austerities, I am the austerity. I am that austerity. Means what? Means what? You cannot even perform austerity out of your own willpower. Out on your own willpower. Because austerity is a spiritual power. Austerity is a spiritual power. Only if Krishna gives you that strength, you can perform austerities. Otherwise, you can't perform austerities. This is why it is the word used is tapas. Tapaschasmi tapasvishu, Krishna says. All those, when they went to forest to perform austerities, that power of austerity is Krishna. Is Krishna. Including Hiranyakashipu, including Ravana. That is why Prahlada told Hiranyakashipu that Hiranyakashipu performed the greatest austerity, isn't it? You know, in the Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu's austerity is very famous. When Brahma came to Hiranyakashipu, he says, Na purva varam, never anyone has performed austerities like you. Because Brahma got frightened seeing Hiranyakashipu's austerity. Na karishyevi, in future, nobody will perform austerities like the way you have done. So straight away, Brahma glorified Hiranyakashipu, seeing his austerity. You know how Hiranyakashipu was after the austerity? The whole body was like one bone standing there. And if you look at that Hiranyakashipu's body at that time, you will wonder, is this the person who has frightened the whole creation with his that body? Such a powerful austerity he has performed. Who granted and who gave that strength? Krishna gave that. Otherwise Hiranyakashipu couldn't have done that. So, important, tapaschasmi tapasvishu. Anyone performing austerity is a spiritual thing. Tapas is a spiritual thing. And anyone who is performing that in this world, it is coming from Krishna. It is coming from Krishna. That is Krishna's persons. So if you look at it that way, in other words, you can even see this willpower. We say about willpower a lot, isn't it? So anything to perform that, you need to have that patience or tolerance for that, to do it. Otherwise, you will not be able to learn that, isn't it? Anything, even including computer. It takes time to grasp the understanding of the whole thing. So, therefore, but that is all the power of the mind. But when it comes to tapasya, it's a little different there. It is not purely mental. Tapasya is not coming from the mind. Much more deeper level, this desire comes for tapasya. It's coming from much more deeper level. For example, some people, they can capture knowledge about various things in this world. They will perform, they have the willpower, they have the austerity to do that. But when it comes to spiritual austerity, they cannot do it. When it comes to spiritual austerity, I can't do it, he'll say. So, when it comes to material life, they can perform certain austerity and they can do it also. Look at this, some of these sports people in Wimbledon and all these tennis players and all the football players and all. You'll be amazed the austerity they perform day after day, 6-8 hours practicing, hitting this ball left and right. They don't get fed up, do they? And we complain about them that, they are earning so well, some of them 50,000, 100,000 pounds a week and all that. We say it's a lot of money for hitting the ball. You can't say like that, because the austerity they have performed behind that is pretty high. Isn't it? We have not performed that austerity, what they have performed. But that is coming from the mind. But for self-realization, when you perform austerity, that is called tapasya. Krishna is saying that tapasya, tapaschasmi tapasvishu, among tapasvis, who is performing, struggling for self-realization, and with that goal, when they are performing tapasya, that is me. Krishna says, that's me. See me there. You will see me there. Just like earlier Krishna said that, isn't it? That Krishna says also in the same way before. So that tapasya is a phenomenon what you see among tapasvis. Tapasvis means who has got tapasya. And that tapasya is a very powerful thing. There are examples in the Puranam and Mahabharatam, Ramayanam, to talk about the tapasya of people's strength, spiritual. We call it in different ways spiritual strength, isn't it? That's another way, because tapasya can only be explained in like that. In Shakuntalam, there is a drama Kalidas has written, Shakuntalam, famous book. Dushyanta goes to forest, isn't it? Dushyanta married Shakuntala, and then he forgot that he married her. He goes back and he's completely forgotten that he has married Shakuntala. Then Shakuntala was living in Kanumarshi's ashram. So in the Shakuntalam, you will see there, Kalidas talks about that, that Dushyanta goes to the forest. And in the forest, while hunting, suddenly, due to providence, he has got there in front of Kanumarshi's ashram. He arrives there. So he didn't know anything that it was Kanumarshi's ashram. And then he was told by someone there who was present, warned him, or it came from the sky as an ashriri, that you are entering into Kanumarshi's space, Kanumarshi's ashram. Until now, he was hunting animals. So you can see the consciousness at that time. Now he are entering into a great personality, spiritual personality's ashram. So you know what Dushyanta did? Immediately, first thing what he did was he threw his bow and arrow away before entering into the ashram premises. Why? Because he know Kannu Maharshi in the ashram is more powerful than him. If he goes there with the same mentality outside when he was hunting, in that consciousness, if you are entering into the ashram, Kannu Maharshi can just use some of his power and burn him into ashes on the spot. He was aware of that. So therefore, you can see the greatness of that king, Dushyanta. When he is entering into Kannu Maharshi's ashram, he throws the bow and arrow away, Kshatriya king, isn't it? For him, it is like the gun for the cowboys, how they keep the gun. It's the same thing, it's a part of their attire, isn't it? For the bow and arrow. So he throw them away, which means a lot of things for the Kshatriya. He throw them away and walks inside. So, and what else did he do? He took his upper cloth and tied it around his waist as a mark of respect. While going in front of the deities, while going in front of rich people who are on a higher level, on a spiritual level, one should take the cloth from the shoulders. It's a mark of respect. In front of the deities and in front of the spiritually advanced people, the system is that you don't wear the dhotis on your shoulder, as bare chested or that way. So he took out that, he had his upper cloth, took it out and tied it on his waist. So then it says there that because he was going to Kanvashramam, Vinidaveshena Gandhavyahi Tapovananinam. When you go to Tapovanam, Tapovanam means where a sage is performing the penances, one should enter in a mood of humility. So in tapasvi, who are performing this tapas, there is a power in them which is very hidden inside. And that power, you have to be very, very careful. You know the sage Vishwamitra. He had realized this. That is how he became Vishwamitra. Isn't it? If you have read Bhagavatam, you will know this. Vishwamitra went to get from Vasishtha this cow, Nandini. What's the name? The cow, he wanted to get her from there. And she was able to offer everything what Vasishtha wanted. In one instance, Vishwamitra went to visit Vasishtha in the forest. So Vasishtha told the king, Vishwamitra was a king, that, and he had come with all his entourage, arrived there. Vasishtha into an ashram and expected to be fed. Vasishtha was not disturbed. Vasishtha knew as long as the this Kamadhenu was there, there was no problem. So all he told Vishwamitra was, go and bathe in the river and come back and everything will be arranged by then. Vishwamitra smiled seeing Vasishtha's confidence. But amazingly, when Vishwamitra came back, there was a full prasadam hall was built with all the prasadam very well prepared, and women from the heavenly planets to reserve the prasadam for the Vishwamitra and all the people who are present there. And after taking that prasadam, Vishwamitra says, even in the palace I haven't eaten a feast like this. This was Vishwamitra's comment. Even in the palace I never had a feast like this. The people who have cooked the food, people who have served the food, and everything, it has sent from heavenly planets. Nandini has brought from the heavenly planets everything. She was capable of doing that. So after that incident, Vishwamitra started worrying. What is my power? I am a king. And compared to this sage Vishwamitra, Vasishtha living in the forest, who am I? I have nothing, no power. That is when he decided, let me develop this power of Brahmavarchasa, they call it, through austerity. It was austerity that was the power of Vasishtha. And Vishwamitra understood that, and then he gave up this everything, his position, went to the forest and started performing exactly like the way he wanted to become and beat Vasishtha. Like Vishwamitra, that determination inside. Of course, there's many other things spoken about that also in the Bhagavadam. So when next thing Vishwamitra did was, he wanted to have that cow to take it to the palace. Vasishtha said, you can have anything else except that. Anything else you can have, because there was nothing else he had to offer except this cow. So Vasishtha says like that. Vishwamitra decided to fight and forcefully take it. What did Vasishtha do? Vasishtha had his yogadanda. You have seen the yogadanda like this, on which they keep their hand while performing their dhyanam. He took the yogadanda and put it in front of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra couldn't move after that. He stood there like a statue, he was standing there. That is the tapasya. Tapaschasmi tapasvishu. So great, great sages, they have tapasya in them. It is through the tapasya, that's why they were not frightened of living in the forest. They had no fear. Because they know how to control others through this power of tapas. So, Vishwamitra started firing arrows, nothing was working. And eventually he gave up and walked away from there. It was at there's a statement from Vishwamitra about this. Aho balam dik balam kshatra balam brahma tejo balam balam, he says. Balam means power. He says, what power? Kshatriya's power, it is nothing. What power, he says, these in different soldiers have got nothing. Aho balam dik balam kshatra balam brahma tejasa balo balam. He says, brahma tejasa means this tapas. Tapas is the real power. He got convinced at that point, and that's why he gave up his... He never again wanted to continue as a king. He became a sage, Vishwamitra Rishi. And that is why you will see that Vishwamitra is for that determination in him to acquire that spiritual power through austerities. That has come to him. It's come to him. Even 100 years ago, people had a fear of this, 100 years ago. People, and they used to respect the Brahmanas for that. Many Brahmanas had certain amount of power in that way. So, but it has changed now. They've also come to our level and they're all at the same status. Otherwise, people are frightened of Brahmana. Why they should be frightened about Brahmana? Physically, they were not powerful. They were very weak. Most of them had no prasadam many days. And not eaten properly. They were so weak. So there was no need to be frightened of them physically. But they were frightened of them because of this tapasya inside. If they say something, then that's it. It will happen. So what used to do was that, we've heard this, when we're children we have heard this, what used to happen that, normally Brahmanas are very poor. In them days they were always poor. They had nothing. Practically nothing. Always in poverty they lived. Always in poverty they lived. But over years now, we people started saying, oh, they exploited others, they cheated others, they lived well and all. That is not true. Maybe there may be exceptions, one or two may have done like that. By and large, they were very, very poor. Their life was completely in poverty. Completely in poverty. And nobody did. They lived completely on the mercy of the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. That is there. Kshatriyas allowed them, protected them from others, and Vaishyas provided them for their maintenance. And whatever they got, they were satisfied. They were not greedy about it. Whatever was given, they were accepting that. And practically, you could see majority of them lived in poverty and great distress. They lived there great distress. But because some people have broken that and came out and started acquiring wealth and all that, a bad name they received later, and in the society they got into trouble. So, just like in sannyasam also, there are good sannyasis in this world. Not all sannyasis are in the same category. There are many sannyasis who are very much renounced and performing austerities, proper knowledge and realization, and maintains that status of sannyasashram. There are sannyasis. And there are many others who are making it as a career and profession properly and abused it also. Both are there in the same way. You can't do anything about it. So that is why it is saying. So in them days what they used to do, sometimes what will happen is, suppose Brahmanas will all have a little cash with them. They will save up for emergencies, they'll keep it. Very little money. Sometimes somebody will go who are in great distress and they'll go and borrow that money from them. Just to beg from them and borrow it and say, tell them that we'll return it to you in a few days' time. They'll ask for some time and they'll return it. So Brahmanas, out of their goodness, they'll give the money. Even it was kept for emergency. Not much, very small amount of money. So these people who have borrowed it, they won't give it back sometimes. They won't give it back. They'll think that, oh, after all, he could wait a little bit more, or when I have money, I will give it. Some excuse they'll make. So Brahmana needs some money and he is in emergency situation. What he will do, he won't fight with them. He'll go to their house and he'll sit there. I'm not eating any food, he will say. I won't eat any food. I'm going to sit here. I won't eat any food from you. That was their way of protest. Their way of protest was like that. And it will merely frighten the householder. who has taken the money. He will get frightened and he will find some way to get the money and give it to him. Not that, oh, he won't say, oh, if you fast and you die, it doesn't matter to me. He won't say like that. Because he knows that if he says something, if you upset him to that extent, that tapasya inside him will come out. And if it comes out, if any word comes out from him, that's enough. Whole family, generation after generation will go, will be finished. You could see Parikshit Maharaj, very powerful king in this world, rule the whole planet, isn't it? Rule the whole planet. And a five-year-old Brahmana boy just put his tongue out and said one or two words, Parikshit gave up the whole kingdom. Who is more powerful? You can see from there itself. Shamiga Rishi, all he said was, whoever has put this snake on my father's neck, within 7 days from time, Takshaka will bite him and be gone from here. That was enough. Could you not think that Parikshit, such a powerful king, who ruled according to Bhagavatam or Mahabharatam, who ruled the whole planet, he got frightened of this five-year-old Brahmana boy, gave up everything and went to the forest to find a solution to the problem. Tapaschasmi, tapastishu. That is tapasya. You can see the strength of tapasya, isn't it? Power of the tapasya. So we'll stop there and we'll have a small kirtan before we go.